This week, we tackle the first in a series of episodes and topics about little-known organizations and philosophical quirks. This week, we're talking about Martinism. What is it? How many branches are there? And where did it come from? Then, we'll talk about the luxury of anger, something Freemasons don't really have. In this piece, Kristen Wilson Slack tells us exactly why.
Then, illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison stops by for the Masonic Minute. We're all pretty familiar with the Morgan affair. We even know that a body was recovered, but that it probably wasn't Morgan. But there was a second body that was recovered. And the effects which were contained with the body stand to blow the case wide open again? Steve Harrison tells all.
We'll wrap it up with a look at an archetype. Are you vigilant? Are you searching for truth? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 553. Right away, I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners for bringing this show to the masses for 10 solid, strong years. This podcast would not be what it is without your assistance and being able to put it all together and put the music behind the articles we read and to be able to have all of our episodes up all the time for anybody. We don't have to have a backlog to allow specific access to or anything else like that. It's all there for you. And I just want to say thanks to all of our people who assist us in the production of this show. If you would like to learn more about how you can help and what you get for helping, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your options. In the news, not a whole lot going on. Just want to remind everybody to check out South Pasadena Masonic Lodge's MasonicCon event for 2022. Visit MasonicCon.com for tickets. This is a huge, huge event. They're not doing any one-day passes. You must be 18 years old to attend. And they are selling three passes, the virtual pass for $25, which is a pre-sale price. They have an all-access pass for $99, which all the lectures and panels, all the screenings, Q&A, access to all the vendors, lunch on Saturday, a Friday reception, the festive board, and a MasonicCon shot glass. And then if you want that executive pass that they have, it's $130 for the pre-sale price, but you also get some additional swag, stickers, a pin, coin, a hat, a mini posters, and two drink tickets, so that's pretty cool. The schedule, day one, doors open at 5:30. There's a welcome address at 7:30 p.m. 8 p.m. is the Pop Culture Festive Board. This is a huge deal. It is so much fun the first time they did it, and you know it's only going to get better. And then the lodge will close up at 11:30 p.m. But the second day starts off bright and early at 8:30 in the morning. The doors are going to open. And their first speaker at 9 a.m. with Jamie Paul Lamb. He's going to be doing a topic called the Archetypal Temple. And then he's got a speaker at 10. We've got Chris Hodapp going to be there. At 11 a.m., we've got Kirk White, who's going to be speaking as well. Then we've got Brother Chuck Dunning at noon. He will be talking on Nurturing the Renaissance of Freemasonry in the 21st Century. 1 o'clock for lunch and a screening and Q&A. They'll be doing a Masonic Table, The Art of Dining in Freemasonry, which will be a moderated Q&A with Brian T. Evans and moderated by Ian E. Laurelin, who does a ton of great work for not only this particular lodge, but also for the Fraternal Review. Then at 3 p.m., they've got Bob Davis coming on. His topic is, It's Time to Cross the Rubicon and Battle Our 20th Century Ruffians. Great speaker, Bob Davis. He's a past grandmaster. Then at 4 p.m., they've got Chris Murphy. He's doing a topic called The Center of Union, Overcoming Societal Discord Through Engagement in Masonic Myth. 5 p.m., a panel discussion for the Masonic Legacy Society. Then at 6 p.m., dinner, 7:30, so you get an hour and a half break for dinner. And then we're coming back. Non-Mason, but speaker, Mitch Horowitz will be talking on Hermeticism and then a screening of the film that he was involved with, The Kybalion. And, of course, then at 9, we will have a screening of Q&A with Mitch Horowitz. I will be moderating that Q&A, which will be a really great time. And then the lodge will close down at 10. But wait, there's more. Day 3. Doors will open at 9:30 a.m. At 10 a.m., a panel on innovations in Freemasonry with Brother Ian Laurelin. And those innovations, the guests on the panel will be myself, Brother Ron Duncan, and Brother Cesar Rubio. Now, if Cesar Rubio sounds familiar, that's because he was on our podcast, and we want to have him back on also. He is behind the Masonic Muscle podcast. You'll want to check that out. 11 a.m., panel on manhood and Freemasonry. I will be moderating that, where Brother Bob Davis and Brother Angel Millar will be both speaking on this really key topic, I believe. And then finally, at about 1 p.m., closing remarks with Brother Dago Rodriguez, and the conference will close out at about 1:30 p.m., and everybody travels home. So I know I just shot a ton of information at you for this particular conference, but other people that are going to be there, right? I mentioned Jamie Paul Lamb, Bob Davis, Chuck Dunning, Brother Brad Drew, Chris Hodap, Chris Murphy, Kirk White, Akram Elias, past Grand Master of Washington, D.C., and the brainchild behind the Masonic Legacy Society will be there. Also, Brother Mike Jarzabek will be there, and Brother Angel Millar, Ron Duncan, Cesar Rubio, Brian T. Evans Jr., Mitch Horowitz, and of course, Eric Strom, myself, and Ian E. Laurelin, who will all be there doing moderating and answering questions and just in general helping to facilitate a great experience for our attendees. I look forward to seeing you guys all there. It is something that I am really stoked about right now. At the end of this month, it's July, everybody. Wow, I can't believe how fast time is flying. Anyway, again, one more time, MasonicCon.com. Check that out. I'd like to visit a few interesting articles and subjects over the next couple weeks that I think are of particular note. They are largely organizations or topics that have been either brushed aside or not treated properly. And so in this, we have covered the Masonic Rosicrucians with the SRIA, the SRICF, and its kind of spin-offs and things in previous episodes, thanks to the great writings by Brother Clint Louie. However, I have received a number of individuals who have asked recently about Martinism. Now, Martinism in and of itself is not necessarily a Masonic thing at all, actually. It is a separate, completely esoteric, mystic, Christian organization. So what I would like to do right now is read you the entry for Martinism from both Wikipedia and other sources. Martinism. Martinism is a form of Christian mysticism and esoteric Christianity concerned with the fall of the first man, his state of material privation from his divine source, and the process of his return, called reintegration. As a mystical tradition, it was first transmitted through a Masonic high degree system established around 1740 in France by Martinez de Pasquale, and later propagated in different forms by his two students, Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin and Jean-Baptiste Willermoz. The term Martinism applies to both this particular doctrine and the teachings of the reorganized Martinist order, founded in 1886 by Augustin Chabosseau and Gerard Encousset, a.k.a. Pappus. It was not used at the tradition's inception in the 18th century. This confusing disambiguation has been a problem since the late 18th century, where the term Martinism was already used interchangeably between the teachings of Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin and Martinez de Pasquale, and the works of the first being attributed to the latter. Regular transmission of Martinism to Augustin Chabosseau and Gerard Encousset has yet to be documented. The three branches of the tradition. Martinism can be divided into three forms through which it has been chronologically transmitted. The Elu Kohens, or Elu Kohen, is the Hebrew for priest, and Elu meaning the elect or the chosen. This was the first and explicitly theurgical way that reintegration was to be attained. The Alucoan were founded by Martinez de Pasquale, who was St. Martin's teacher. The original Alucoan ceased to exist sometime in the late 18th or early 19th century, but it was revived in the 20th century by Robert Anne Boleyn, and lives on today in various Martinist orders, including the branch reinstigated by Anne Boleyn himself. In the highest of the 3 degrees of the Order of Alucoan, known as the Shrine, itself consisting of 3 degrees, of which the highest was the Master Rocroi, evocation of entities belonged to the divine plane was carried out. This makes clear that the Alucoan were not merely a mystical but a magical order. The chief evocation was that of the Mender, Jehoshua, and the basic methods were those of the Key of Solomon, including the use of circles, names of angels, planetary hours and symbols. The magical operations of the lower degrees were intended to establish contact between the operator and the invisible world. Lofty and beautiful prayers recalled the goal which the order tried to attain. There were also exorcisms intended to strangle demonic influences in the universe and thwart its powers over men and to combat black magic. The Scottish Rectified Rite, or CBCS. This was originally a Masonic rite, a reformed variant of the Rite of Strict Observance, which, in its highest degrees, uses Masonic-type rituals to demonstrate the philosophy, which underlines both Martinism and the practices of the Alucoan. The CBCS was founded in the late 18th century by Jean-Baptiste Willermoz, who was a pupil of Martinez de Pasquale and a friend of St. Martin. The CBCS has managed to survive as continually practiced rite from its founding until the present day, both as a purely Masonic rite and as a detached rite which is also open to women. The Martinism of Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin, a mystic tradition in which emphasis is placed on meditation and inner spiritual alchemy. Saint Martin disapproved of these teachings being called Martinism by his contemporaries and instead explained it as a silent way of the heart to attain reintegration. Saint Martin most likely did not organize this path as an order but gathered small circles of students around him where he transmitted his teachings. In a nutshell, the Martinism as we know it today consists of the theurgic tradition of Martinism de Pasquale, Martinism, the Masonic Templarism of Jean-Baptiste Willermoz, Willermozism, and the Christian theosophy of Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin. The heritage was reorganized into the Ordre Martiniste in 1886 by Augustin Chabuzot and Gerard Ancousset, also known again as Pappus. The regular transmission of the Martinist heritage to Chabuzot and Pappus has not been proven as of today. Martinez de Pasquale and the Alucoan. Jacques de Livron, Joachim de la Tour de la Casa Martinez de Pasquale, was born in circa 1727 in Grenoble, France, and died in 1774 in Saint-Domingue while dealing with profane business. Martinez de Pasquale was active in Masonic organizations throughout France from the age of 28 onwards. In 1765, he established the Order of Knight Masons Elect Priests of the Universe, which functioned as a regular Masonic obedience in France. This order had 3 sets of degrees. The first were analogous to the symbolic degrees of conventional Freemasonry. The second were generally Masonic, though hinting at Pasquale's own secret doctrine. The third set were blatantly magical, for example, by using exorcisms against evil in the world, generally, and in the individual specifically. In the highest degree, the Rucroi, or Rucroi, the initiate was taught to use theurgy to contact spiritual realms beyond physical. Now, I'm going to break here very quickly in this to define the term theurgic, or theurgy. Theurgy is from the Greek, and it describes the practice of using ritual, sometimes seen as magical in nature, performed with the intention of invoking the action or evoking the presence of one or more deities, especially with the goal of achieving henosis, or uniting with the divine and perfecting oneself. So, in general, theurgy is a Masonic type of activity, In fact, when we invoke the blessing of deity, we are practicing a form of theurgy. Now, back to the paper. De Pasquale put forth the philosophy underlying the work of the Alou Cohen in his only book, Treatise on the Reintegration of Beings, which first uses the analogy of the Garden of Eden and refers to Christ as the repairer. The ultimate aim of the Alou Cohen was to attain, whilst living, the beatific vision through a series of magical invocations and complex theurgic operations. After Martinez de Pasquale's death, the Alou Cohen continued to operate for some time. However, divisions started to occur between various temples, which became dormant during the first half of the 19th century. The last known surviving Alou Cohen from the original incarnation of the order, Destigny, died in 1868. Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin. Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin was born in 1743 in Amboise, France, and died in 1803. He was originally a barrister before taking a commission in the army at Bordeaux. Saint-Martin was initiated into the Alou Cohen in 1768 and was active in the organization for at least 6 years. Saint-Martin was initiated into the Rue Croix, the highest degree of the order, and in 1770 became de Pasquale's secretary. Saint-Martin became increasingly dissatisfied with the Alou Cohen's use of the theurgic ritual, feeling that it was too sophisticated for the desired end. Instead, he favored inward contemplation, or what he called the way of the heart. Nevertheless, Saint-Martin continued to acknowledge Martinez de Pasquale's influence on his own systems of thought. In addition, Saint-Martin drew much inspiration from the work of Jacob Boehm. In 1777, after failing to convince the Alou Cohen to adopt a more contemplative practice, he cut back his involvement in the order. He ceased all involvement in 1790. Saint-Martin outlined his philosophy in several books using the nom de plume The Unknown Philosopher. These include Of Errors and Truth, 1775, Man, His True Nature and Ministry, Aphorisms and Maxims, The Spiritual Ministry of Man, Ten Prayers, The Red Book, Theosophic Correspondence, Natural Table of the Correspondences Between God, Man, and the Universe, 1782. There have been some controversies over whether Saint-Martin himself ever founded the formalized order of the Martinists. For example, in the 20th century, Martinist author Robert Anberlin initially claimed that Saint-Martin founded an order called the Society of Initiates. But within a few years, he became disillusioned with the concept and stated that the Society of Initiates never existed. Others allege that Saint-Martin became involved in a pre-existing society called the Order of Unknown Philosophers. It seems most probable, however, that although Saint-Martin did initiate disciples, after a fashion, this was done on an informal basis. Martinism did not exist as an order per se until the efforts of Pappus and Chavusseau, Willermoes and the Scottish Rectified Rite. Jean-Baptiste Willermoes, born 1730 in Lyon, France, died in 1824, also at Lyon, was initiated into Masonry at the age of 20 in a lodge which operated under the auspices of the strict observance. He was initiated into the Alou Cohen in 1767, eventually attaining the highest degree of the order and being named by de Pasquale as the superior judge, one of its most senior officers. Concerned about dissent in the order after the death of de Pasquale, Willermoes in 1778, together with two other superior judges, formulated the idea of creating two additional degrees for the Auvergne province of the strict observance, which exemplified the philosophy through not the theurgic practices of the Alou Cohen while working in the Knight Templar-oriented milieu of the Masonic Rite. The name of the rite was changed to the Chevaliers Beneficent de la Cité Sainte, or the CBCS. The degree structure of the rite was thus: apprentice, fellowcraft, master, Scotch master, squire novice, the CBCS, Chevalier or professed knight, and the Chevalier of Grand Professed Knight. Having reformed the French branch of the order, Willermoes in 1782 succeeded in persuading the German mother branch to adopt his reforms, though not without meeting considerable opposition from other branches of the strict observance, such as the Bavarian Illuminati of Adam Weishaupt. The French Revolution curtailed the activities of the CBCS in France, although the rite was preserved in Switzerland. Today, the CBCS, or Scottish Rectified Rite, has several great priories throughout the world, Switzerland, USA, France, both the Waits and Michael Herberts, great priories in England, Germany, Belgium, Spain, Portugal, and Brazil, with prefectures and lodges of St. Andrew as well as rectified craft lodges existing in many places from Italy to Brazil to Romania. Papas and the Chauvusseau, the founding of the Martinist Order. The disciples of St. Martin spread the doctrine of the unknown philosopher in France, Germany, Denmark, and above all in Russia. It was through one of them, Henri Delage, that in 1880, a brilliant young Parisian doctor, Gerard Ancousset, later to be known as Papus, became acquainted with the doctrines of St. Martin. Subsequently, in 1884, together with some of his associates, he established a mystical order, which he called the Order Martiniste, or the Martinist Order. The founding of the order came about when Ancousset met Augustin Chauvusseau in 1884. In parallel, Stanislas de Guaita, in association with Papus and Pierre-Augustin Chauvusseau, founded the Order Kabbalistique de la Rose-Croix in 1888. Papus and Chauvusseau discovered that they had both apparently received Martinist initiation through two different chains of succession, which linked back to St. Martin and his original disciples. Papus claimed to have come into the possession of the original papers of De Pasquale, and to have been given authority in the rite of St. Martin by his friend Henri Viscount Delage. However, Ancousset realized that there was a missing link in his own chain of succession. He and Chauvusseau therefore swapped initiations to consolidate their lineages. The Martinist order, which Papus founded, was organized as a lodge system which worked four degrees: associate, mystic, Unknown Superior, or S.I., and Unknown Superior Initiator, S.I.I. Of these, the first two introduce the candidate to key Martinist concepts, while the third supposedly confers the actual initiation which San Martin gave to his original disciples. Martinists generally believing that to be an authentic initiate, one must be able to show a chain of initiatic succession, which goes back to St. Martin himself. However, Restivo states that the Martinist authenticity is not contingent upon acceptance or initiation into a filiation or succession of other Martinists, as no personal initiation chain from Louis-Claude de Saint-Martin exists in the sacramental manner of ordination as culmination of mastery in an initiatic order. About the rituals themselves, the following general points may be made. The mystical Christianity of Martinism is emphasized by the fact that all the lodges are opened by invoking Yeshua, the Tetragrammaton, with the addition of the Hebrew letter Shin, which was first suggested by Reuchlin as a Kabbalistic way of spelling Jesus. Despite the lodge structure of Martinism, the rituals themselves do not bear any resemblance to the symbolic degrees of Freemasonry. The rituals have their own milieu of dramatic and esoteric content. It has been claimed, however, that some of the rituals derive from the Egyptian Freemasonry of Cagliostro and the Scottish Rectified Rite of Willermoes. The rituals contain elements of Martinez de Pasquale's philosophy and passing reference to Kabbalah, in addition to principles derived from St. Martin's own teachings. The candidate, at key points throughout the rituals, is expected to answer on his or own initiative. He or she constantly encouraged to meditate on the symbolism presented. The rituals often rely on the element of surprise to reinforce the points they make. During the period up to the Second World War, the Unknown Superior or Unknown Superior Initiator degree was exceptionally added as an endorsement of rank or distinction to the degree for legates in the new Martinist jurisdictions who were expected to eventually become Grand Masters. Later branches of the Martinist order worked a fifth degree, the Free Initiator, which conferred on the candidate the power to initiate others into all four degrees in person, not requiring a lodge or heptad group form, and to establish the new independent Martinist order as well as to act as the legate or representative or grandmaster of that new order. For example, the Rose-Croix Martinist Order in Ontario, Canada, offers the associate, the Mystic, the Unknown Superior, Unknown Superior Initiator, and the Free Initiator, Modern Martinism. In 1905, Tsar Nicholas II of Russia invited Pappas to Tsarskoye Selo to ask him for advice on domestic difficulties that he was facing with revolutionaries. The First World War was disastrous for the order. Pappas died on the battlefield fulfilling his duties as a doctor, as did many other leaders of the order. After the war, the order was almost extinct, and the surviving members splintered into competing factions. René Guénon was himself initiated into the Martinist order between 1906 and 1912. He was a member of a Martinist lodge called Humanidad and Melchizedek, and published articles in Le Nation, Revin, Revue Independente de Haute Etude Martiniste, and others. The Congress Spiritualist held in Paris on 7 through 10 of June in 1908 and organized by Pappas, with the presence of Victor Blanchard, Paul Vaux, Paul Trakornak, Theodore Roos, and Charles Dieter, alias Teeter, took place at the peak of the collaboration between Guénon and Pappas. However, the regularity of the Martinist order was strongly questioned by Brother O, Pontet of the Grand Orient de France. The creation by Guénon in 1909 of the Ordered Temple within the premises of the Martinist order, as well as his involvement in a Gnostic church under the name of Palingenius, prompted the separation between Pappas and Guénon. Many French Martinists supported Carl Wilhelm Nondorf's claims to the French throne. They joined the Synarchy movement and formed the Ordre Martiniste Synarchy, or the OM&S, under the leadership of Victor Blanchard, both imperators of the ancient mystical order of Rose-Croix, or AMORC. Ralph Maxwell Lewis and Harvey Spencer Lewis were initiated into the OM&S. AMORC imperator Harvey Spencer Lewis held the title of Grand Inspector for the America, as well as Sovereign Grand Master Legate for the United States, and was granted a charter to establish lodges in the United States. Lewis later decided not to proceed with the OM&S plan for the U.S., due to the fact that Victor Blanchard was unable to produce all the required documentation. It turned out that the activities of the OM&S were limited to the transmission of various Martinist initiations, and that the order otherwise had no actual existence. There was no Martinist lodge in Paris at the time, and Victor Blanchard gave his initiations in the temple of the Fraternité des Polaires. In 1931, Augustin Chabusseau joined Victor Emile Michelet and Lucien Chamoul, the other two surviving members of the original Supreme Council of 1891, to resuscitate the order that they had founded with Pappas, to emphasize the difference between traditional Martinism and the many new groups that had emerged. They named their movement the Ordre Martiniste Traditional, or OMT. Victor Emile Michelet was elected Grand Master, and Augustin Chabusseau succeeded him in 1939 until his death in 1946. AMORC Imperator Ralph Maxwell Lewis was asked by the OMT in 1939 to bring traditional Martinism to the United States. Lewis was thus appointed Sovereign Legate and Regional Grand Master of the OMT, and received the necessary charters and other documents required in order to proceed with the order's expansion. The Second World War was as disastrous for the order in Europe as the first. The Nazi regime suppressed all occult groups, and many Martinists died in concentration camps. The OMT in Europe and its American branch, the Traditional Martinist Order, TMO, still exist. The TMO currently operates in almost every free country in the world under the protection of AMORC, or AMORC. Martinism is still growing in popularity, and with the advent of the Internet, many new orders and online groups expressing an interest in Martinism have emerged worldwide. The Martinist order, L'Ordre Martiniste, founded by Pappas in 1887, continues and grows worldwide with groups across Europe, Africa, the United States, and the Middle East. List of Martinist orders. Ordre Martiniste de Pappas, also known as OM. This is the original Martinist order, founded by Pappas, and its lineage continues through his son, Philippe and Cosset. The OM is the trunk of Martinism, out of which many Martinist orders branched out throughout history. It is headquartered in Paris, France, but has councils all over the world. This body works in North America under the name Martinist Order, Grand Council of the United States, or OM-US, under the supervision of a Grand Delegate and a chamber of directors consisting of Grand Officers. The Grand Delegate to the United States is appointed by the OM Sovereign Grand Master, Gabriel, who presides over the Supreme Council in France. OM admits seekers, men and women of all faiths. It has presence in various countries. Ancient Martinist Order, AMO, which aspires to unify the various Martinist orders under one structure. The Ancient Martinist Order came into existence on April 9, 2000, and was granted the right and justification to exist with blessings of the Sovereign Grand Masters of the Order Martiniste et Senechique of Canada and Barbados, and from the authorized delegates and the liberal initiators representing the Order Martinist du Papis, the Order Martinist Initiatic Reform, the Order Martinist Chevalier du Christ, and the Order of Elect Cohens. The Ancient Martinist Order operates bodies of traditional Martinist works in the United States, Russia, Mexico, and Australia. There is also the Ancient Order of the Rosicrucians, AOR, Antigua Ordem Martinista. The British Martinist Order, or BMO, includes French and Russian lineages, the Hermetic Order of Martinists, Lord Martiniste Traditional, OMT, which operates under the aegis of AMORC in French, Martinist Order Africa and the Middle East, operates in English under the aegis of Lord Martiniste France, the Martinist Order OVC, based in Sweden and concentrating on the Voy Cardiac and Chivalric traditions. There's also the Martinist Order of the Golden and Rosy Cross, Martinist Order of Unknown Philosophers, or MOOP, the OMAT, the OMO, the list goes on and on and on. Well, there you have a pretty solid overview of Martinism in its historical sense, the teachings and things that they go through, and the interesting lineage of the organization throughout time, including organizations that are being born up to present day, even like we mentioned, one in the year 2000. If you'd like more information, of course, I'll have links to everything we talked about here in this particular article in the show notes. I hope you check it out. My question for the Craftsman Plus is, have you ever thought about Martinism, and do you have an interest in it? Not asking if you're a member or not, just general talking about the interest and the idea of the reintegration after the fall of man.
Next up, let's get into the Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Are you tired of the Morgan affair? Do you think we've explored every nook, cranny, and crevice of the evidence and come to a dead end on a street to nowhere? Are you ready to move on? Me too. But before we do, let's just take one more quick look at something. For those of you who have been living on the backside of the Masonic moon and have never heard of the Morgan affair, here's a quick summary. In 1826, William Morgan, who had connived his way into Masonic lodges, but wasn't really a brother, announced he was going to publish a book revealing Masonic secrets. Upset, certain Masons kidnapped Morgan and spirited him off to the border of New York and Ontario. After that, no one knows what happened. Speculation that the Masons murdered Morgan ran high. Anti-Masonic furor followed, with about a half dozen convictions for the kidnapping. Amidst all the confusion, a body showed up, was determined to be Morgan, and buried. Then it was exhumed and determined to be someone else. Afterward, there were more Morgan sightings than there had been of Elvis, but none were confirmed, only adding to the mystery and confusion. Now, that's not even the Reader's Digest version of the incident. but those are facts known to anyone if they know anything about the Morgan affair. But you never, or rarely, hear about the second body. That's right, the second body. I refer you to the New York Times of June 22, 1821, with a headline, front page center, that screams, William Morgan's Bones. A subheading informs us, workers found a ring with the body that had the initials WM, and a tobacco box that seemed to prove the bones were those of Morgan. Let me read a bit of this lengthy article. Batavia, New York, June 21st. This little town is filled with excitement today over the discovery of what are believed to be the remains of William Morgan, the man who betrayed the secrets of the Freemasons in his book entitled Morgan's Illustrations of Masonry 55 years ago, and was abducted and made away with before his work was given to the public. The mystery surrounding the fate of William Morgan has defied human ingenuity for over half a century, and now it seems destined to be unraveled at last when most, if not all, the actors in the tragedy, like its victim, are laid away in the grave. About 11 miles west of Batavia in Genesee County lies the town of Pembroke, and it is in this place that the bones were found. Some men were opening up a stone quarry when they suddenly came upon the remains of a human skeleton. The locality is about 2 miles south of the Tonawanda Indian Reservation, and the men at first thought they had chanced upon the bones of some Indian brave. But this idea was soon dispelled by the consideration that no trinkets were found with the skeleton, and such articles are always buried with the remains of a departed Indian. It was quite evident that the persons who had deposited the body in its resting place intended that it should be well concealed. After some time, one of the party discovered a silver ring, which was found to bear the monogram WM, the initials of William Morgan. The initials WM, however, will fit a great many names, so the discovery of the ring, taken by itself, would not be considered of such great importance. But soon, an object of much greater significance was discovered. This was a small tin box. In the box was found a manuscript, the writing of which was scarcely legible. The crumpled paper was taken to the office of Dr. Phillips, where it was placed under a microscope. The words Masons, Liar, Prison, Kill, and the full name Henry Brown were plainly visible. The name of Henry Brown, too, is most significant. At the time of Morgan's disappearance, Henry Brown was a lawyer in this town and a prominent Mason. In 1829, 3 years after the tragedy, he published a book entitled A Narrative of the Anti-Masonic Excitement in the Western Part of the State of New York. In it, Henry Brown gives a very correct account of the abduction of William Morgan and admits that it was probably done by Masons who, in their zeal for their order, lacked discretion. He strives to show that although Morgan was abducted, there is no proof that he was murdered, and indulges in long arguments to show that the anti-Masonic excitement created by the Morgan tragedy was uncalled for, and the work of political demagogues. If it shall now appear that the body found is accompanied by a threatening letter signed by Brown, the influence will be irresistible, that the remains are those of William Morgan, and that Henry Brown, the great defender of the Masons of Batavia, was one of the murderers. This discovery bids fair to explode all other theories regarding the fate of Morgan. The article goes on to give great detail about the Morgan affair, but it says nothing about what was done with the body or the artifacts found with it. Bear in mind, this is from the New York Times, not the Deadwood Dish Rag. If the account is true, perhaps Henry Brown was one of the murderers, as the article suggests. Or consider that one of the myriad of Morgan theories claims he lived in that area with Native Americans, and workers found this body near a reservation. So if that manuscript was in Morgan's handwriting, does it prove he lived in the area until at least 1829, read the book, and was himself calling Brown a liar? In which case, the Masons did not kill Morgan. The Morgan Affair. The mysterious 19th century Masonic gift that keeps on giving. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. I don't know about you guys, but this started off like interesting, but I knew that Steve was going to take a wild angle with it and brought this new story to light that I am absolutely intrigued by. And now I want to go on a trip and find all of the details and do the legwork like for a modern day Discovery show special. How crazy, how awesome was this? And honestly, who knew? Where has this information been hiding? Like, in plain sight, really. But pretty darn incredible. If you like this story and others like it, check out Steve's works. You can find them all in the WCY bookstore on WCYpodcast.com. All the links go right back to Amazon, and they are affiliate links. So your purchase there doesn't cost you any more, but the author gets a sale and a few pennies come back to the WCY podcast. Steve has also been so influential in all of the things that he does in Masonry, and in particular with the Missouri Lodge of Research, of which he has been a titan. I will put a link back to the Missouri Lodge of Research, an organization that I too am a member. Steve is a fellow of the Missouri Lodge of Research, and it's a fantastic organization. I urge you to check out their website and consider joining today. So many thanks to illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison for this all-new perspective, this new work, and essentially the Masonic version of Unsolved Mysteries. All right, next up is a short piece by Kristen Wilson Slack from the Universal Freemasonry WordPress blog, and it's called The Luxury of Anger, and it was posted on March 7th, 2022. In a recent conversation, I was talking with a fellow Freemason from another order about hate. He was telling me about how one of his members, of a fairly high degree, harbored deep resentment toward another of his members. In an organization built upon discipline and education, this seems uncharacteristic, after all that we're learning as Freemasons about holding our brethren in high regard and affording them every kind office. How can anyone be angry at another brother for any length of time? It seems irresponsible. Then it struck me, equally as deeply, that the more you stay on this path of Freemasonry, you do not have the luxury of anger or hatred, nor the privilege of animosity or of fear of any kind. You learn that the division of people of whatever kind they might be are meaningless and unnecessary, and that we Freemasons are dedicated to the eradication of division and strife. Our personal quarrels and piques do not matter one whit to our work as Freemasons. So why does anger at another brother happen? We learn from our earliest steps in the craft that personal issues should be taken care of outside of the meeting, so that the order and harmony of the lodge is not disturbed by this quarrel. This is the first step in solving our issues
and this process can be very different than how the rest of humanity deals with things. Quote-unquote, normal people resort to gossip, backstabbing, shunning, yelling, or out-and-out violence. A Freemason stands apart, or should. We know better. A Freemason's instructions are clear. Figure it out between you, get over your issues, and come together. Now. The path of Freemasonry, taking the higher road. This direction never changes and in fact grows. Not only must you not be at odds with other members, but you must not be at odds with the lodge decisions, the head of your lodge, your district, or your overall order. Still further on the path, you are a representative of higher calling, your mystery school, as it were. You represent a path of taking the higher road, eventually, in order to promote the welfare of humanity and Freemasonry as a whole. You cannot afford to be wrapped up in self-obsessed emotion. Otherwise, the great work can never happen. You may disagree with the decision and work toward orderly change, but you do not have the luxury of having anger. You can fight to right a wrong, fight for the oppressed, or strive for change. You just can't foment hate or anger. The base nature of this emotion has no place in Freemasonry. And so, it comes round that the brother who cannot transcend their anger will be swallowed up by it, and another good person will slowly sink into their lower nature. It is a simple step to realize that it is hubris to harbor resentment, and humility to let it go. I say simple, but in fact the act is about letting go of our deeply ingrained behavior and learning a new way of being. It takes practice. As Freemasons, we wake to a higher calling. It is on us to remain awake and never sleep. Kristen Wilson Slack. Again, I will have a link back to the original post for the Craftsman Plus. Tell us about a time you were angry and that you realized this was not the path and how you got through it. All right. Now, before we close out this week, we're not going to do a tarot card read, but we're going to look at a personal archetype card. Now, these are what's called oracle decks. I reviewed this particular oracle deck on TikTok recently under the channel The Wizard of Arge. Mr. Nick Bantock is the creator of Griffin and Sabine. He created a deck called the Archeo, Personal Archetype Cards. It comes with a nice book that we'll read from in a moment, but essentially, I think what we can do here is shuffle his cards. He's got 40 archetype cards. We will draw one of the cards randomly. I will take a picture of it and post it in the Craftsman Plus group. And then we will read a little bit about what that archetype card means from Nick Bantock's short book. And then we'll ask whether or not this card aligns with us. If you hear that, I'm shuffling now. If that card aligns with us, and if it does, what that means for us, and maybe we can look at it a little bit in a lens from Freemasonry. So I just shuffled them. I'm going to use this little cut card. These cards are really cool. They're oversized, and I think they're really neat. So we'll do that. And I'm just going to flip the top card over. So the archetype we got is an image of an angel. So I will snap a picture of this and I'll post it in the group. I'll also have a link back to purchase this deck if you're interested. But the angel, you know, right away my intuition about the card, you know, I'm probably thinking about peacefulness, and for whatever reason, justice always comes to mind because of the iconography within Freemasonry. In this picture, the angel is wrapping her arms around herself, her wings are back, and the feathers are moved forward, just protruding straight from her hips. But I don't really know what the card means, right? Because normally we're doing tarot, but oracle decks are different in that they mean exactly what the author says they mean. So what does this author say about this card? The angel. It says the attribute. From the outset, the angel has been assigned to you. She keeps you from mishap and makes sure you give your best, but her protection is not guaranteed. Her assistance comes in direct proportion to your willingness to search for truth. As long as you continue your soul's quest, she will be with you. But if you become lazy and refuse to journey, she will evaporate, like mist, into the ether. When darkness falls across the landscape, the angel protects us from the emissaries of delusion. She is an angel of mercy, bringing gentle solace that holds at bay the night's bitter incubus, reassuring us through the loneliness of self-doubt, guiding us towards our soul's intent. She keeps us from straying too far into melancholy, and if we become overwhelmed by the rigors of our daily grind, she will help nourish us. Hovering in the gray between the tangible and metaphysical, visible to no one but us, she speaks of truths that we are too frightened or tired to articulate. When she wraps us in her silvery wings, we feel her radiance coursing through our arteries, filling us with a poppy juice calm. She is vigilant, sentry, and luminous heart, exhorting us to be all that we can be, insisting we never settle for tepid image of a lesser self. Beautifully put. So what I gather from this is that it is a reminder to constantly seek truth. That's the part of the text that stood out to me, the idea of truth and angels, again, as it goes back to the Masonic symbolry of the symbol of justice and an angel, in those kinds of symbolisms just connected with me personally as I was reading it. Does that mean that I should be vigilant in continuing my work? Instead of taking a 40-minute nap, maybe I should take a 20-minute nap and spend 20 minutes reading or contemplative activities or something along those lines. A search for truth and to be vigorous about it. Just a little reminder, I guess. Anyway, feel free to post any of your thoughts about the card and its meaning in the post in the Facebook group. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for joining me on this awesome edition of the Whence Came You podcast. One more time, I want to thank the producers, fellows, legacy partners, and contributors of the show who make this happen every single week. And of course, also to everybody out there who shares the episodes with their Lodge brothers, whether that's in emails or you've embedded the player on your Lodge page or whatever the case is. I just want to thank you guys for sharing the information. If you're curious on how to support this show, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the different options. One more time, I want to remind you to check out MasonicCon.com for the South Pasadena Masonic Lodge's 3-day MasonicCon event happening at the end of the month. I'll be there along with a bunch of other guys who are way cooler than I am. It's going to be an awesome time. With that, I'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level for Whence Came You. I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition. Thank you.
WCY Media.
That's it. Here's your...